All lines are now bridge.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the December edition of the Health Information Technology Advisory Committee. I'd like to first wish everyone a happy holiday season, just in case this is our last meeting of the year. And thank you all for your time and being with us today. It's a busy season for all of us, I'm sure, especially busy here at ONC, so appreciate you being with us today. We will have remarks from our national coordinator and our deputy national coordinator shortly, but I will officially call the meeting to order, starting with roll call first. Carolyn Peterson.
I'm here.
Robert Watt.
Present.
Michael Adcock. Not yet. Okay. Christina Caraballo.
Present.
Tina Esposito.
Present.
Cynthia Fisher.
Present.
Brad Gescheider did indicate he would be absent today. Valerie Gray.
Here.
Anil Jain.
Here.
John Hansi.
Here.
Ken Kawamoto.
Good morning.
Stephen Lane.
Here.
Leslie Leonard.
Here.
Arian Mallett also indicated he would be absent today. Denny McComb.
Present.
Clem McDonald.
Here.
Good morning. Aaron Leary.
Good morning.
Good morning. Brett Oliver.
Here.
Harry O'Malley.
Here.
Raj Watani.
Here.
Steve Reedy.
Present.
Patrick Soon-Chong.
Here.
Sasha Termak.
Here.
Andy Trescott. Not yet. Okay. Cheryl Turney.
Here. Cheryl's here.
Thank you. Denise Webb.
Present.
Thank you. Kate Goodrich. Cecily Richards. Rahm indicated he would be absent. And Lauren Thompson.
I'm here.
Great. And joining me here at ONC, Elise Sweeney Anthony, John Fleming, John White, John Rucker, and Steve Posner. And with that, I will turn it over to our national coordinator, Dr. Rucker.
Thanks, Lauren. First of all, thanks everybody for attending. I know it's a busy time, and your work is much appreciated. We've been busy as well. I think as folks know, the CURES role, the 21st Century CURES role, is in the OMB clearance process. So we hope that we hope to get that out relatively soon. I don't have a specific day. We're also moving along quite rapidly on the work around the trust exchange framework and the common agreement. And, you know, once those are released, the trust exchange framework we're putting out for another round of comment. And obviously and that actually is technically not a rule, but something called a framework. There are a number of sort of there are very specific definitions of all these things, but we're putting it out for public comment as if it were a rule. And the OpenAPI/information blocking the CURES rule will, of course, in the regular order, go out as for notice of public rulemaking comment. We anticipate all kinds of comments there, just because it really does change, I think, the landscape of how consumers can get their clinical information and interact with their clinical information and really have new forms of giving care. In that, there are also some things to sync up the certification program to the concepts around open APIs. Somebody may want to go on mute. I don't know.
If we could have assistance muting some of the lines for background noise.
Yeah, we have a bunch of noise. Thanks. two sort of recent events that you may have seen in the news. On we recently on the 4th, I believe, had an interoperability event at the White House. Number of people were convened by the White House to talk about, you know, things missing in interoperability. I think the takeaway there is that this is an area of national focus and of White House interest. SEMA spoke, Jared Kushner spoke, folks from the VA spoke, and I got to comment as well. The Congress remains very interested in the 21st Century Cures Act. We've had a number of times, and for various reasons, mostly on the congressional side, hadn't happened, but we had an oversight hearing of ONC's work on 21st Century Cures with the Health Subcommittee of Energy and Commerce. That was on Tuesday. I think they basically asked me questions for an hour and 45 minutes. So if anybody wants to see that, it's online under Energy and Commerce. So you can Google that. It's a little bit dry. I don't think we met the total excitement standard for congressional hearings. Thank goodness. But I think it does give you, I think the way to take that is there's a deep interest in this, and the members of Congress, I think, had some very specific questions. We've had a number of discussions and questions from the staffers on this. They're very interested in high tech, you know, giving advice, as will be in the report, and just in general on interoperability, the privacy and security questions that is item number two on the high tech charge came up in probably half the questions, I would say. Security also obviously an access, the access part also the third item, big concerns. So those things are out there. The last two things I want to talk about briefly are under CURES, we're required, along joint with CMS, to put out a report on provider, mostly, to be truthful, physician burden. And we extended that actually to provider burden related to electronic health records. That is out for public comment until January 28th. And there is a lot of material in that report. So if folks or the organizations high-tech members represent, this, if there's anything in general you want to comment on in American healthcare, there's probably a hook in that report to do it. So, for example, it would be great. One of the things we're starting to look at, and we'll have more interaction with high-tech on this as well, the Interoperability Committee, I believe, is prior authorization. This is a big area. This is a very interesting area in terms of what can be computed here, things like CDS hooks. Is that enough? There's, you know, a massive amount of stakeholder interest in this. So folks have some thoughts there that they would like to put into public comment. And again, just as an FYI, the public comments are visible to everybody. So it is a way to do some messaging. The final thing, there's a provision in the CURES for an electronic health record reporting program. Think of this as a consumer reports. It was originally supposed to be, it was authorized to be budgeted at $15 million. Turns out that didn't happen, but we are starting on that. We've engaged a contractor to start putting some comments. We had 77 responses on an RFI about how that should be done forward, and I think that is an area, it's not the immediate top priority list of high tech, but that may be something for you to think about. So thanking everybody for their work here, I'd like to turn it over to John White, our Deputy National Coordinator.
Thank you, Don. Well, hello, everybody. Good morning. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. I just want to offer a tip of the collective ONC hat to Dr. Rucker for his testimony to the House subcommittee. He did a very masterful job. It was a rich and thorough discussion with very good engagement from our legislative counterparts. So cheers, boss. Want to be able to recap for you a little bit about the ONC annual meeting. ONC hosted its eighth, unbelievably, annual meeting last month. This was very well attended. This year's theme was highlighting progress and driving success. Our agenda was chock full of distinguished speakers, including Senators Alexander, Baldwin, and a number of other folks. There are some very good and rich panel discussions and deep breakout sessions on a variety of topics, including interoperability, healthcare standards such as FHIR, health information exchange, addressing the opioid crisis, application programming interfaces, value-based care, and a whole host of other topics. I know some of you were in attendance, so thank you for those who participated in person. We had a cast of thousands online as well. So great attendance all around. Our sessions, I believe, will be posted if you want to be able to stream sessions at a later date. We're vetting them to make sure that they're all cleaned up and tidy for you, but you should be able to come back and take a look at the sessions online later. We would love to hear any feedback from those of you who attended if you want. So thanks to everybody at ONC for making the annual meeting such a success, particularly Jean Kaplan, our Director of Communications. I want to expand a little bit on Dr. Rucker's comments on the Burden Reduction Report. On November 28th, ONC and CMS released for public comment our draft strategy on reducing regulatory and administrative burden relating to the use of health IT and EHRs as required by the 21st Century Cures Act. Our effort was led by Dr. Andy Gettinger with strong efforts by Peter Karras and a team of ONC all-stars on our side, as well as our colleagues at CMS. Under the Cures Act, we were charged to establish a goal for burden reduction, to develop strategies to support that goal and make recommendations to drive those strategies, with a specific call for recommendations that improve the clinical documentation experience, that improve patient care, that can be taken by the Secretary and other entities, and can reduce the reporting burden required of healthcare providers. In the development of this draft strategy, ONC and CMS held a number of listening sessions, town hall meetings, and webinars to inform the report, with a really rich tapestry of input from a wide variety of stakeholders. I know several of you were involved with those, so thank you again for those of you who gave us your input. The report is broken down into several key burden topics, including clinical documentation, quality reporting using EHRs, health IT usability and user experience, and public health reporting. As Don said, the report is now out for public comment through January 28th. If you don't want to comment on yourselves, please consider your colleagues that you know who might have some useful feedback for us to send them the draft report so they can give us their feedback as well. You all have are wonderful experts in and of your own right, but you've got really rich networks and that would give us really valuable input for attacking, you know, really what's one of our two top priorities in this administration. So we encourage each of you to comment individually if you wish, of course. You can find the report on healthit.gov, but we'll also send you the URL directly. And we do expect the final strategy report to be released in the spring of 2019, coming up soon, and we'll certainly share the final report with you then. And that is all from me. Thank you for your attention. Back over to our co-chairs, Carolyn and Robert.
And before we transition to Carolyn and Robert, I think Elise had some remarks as well. Elise?
Yeah, so I just wanted to take a minute and thank everyone again, you know, as John said, for the work on the annual meeting, particularly the presenters and the staff for the breakout sessions. I think they were just a wonderful opportunity, you know, to hear perspectives, not only from ONC's side, but also from those who attended, lessons learned, opportunities for collaboration and coordination. So thanks again to everybody who helped pull those together. I also wanted to provide a quick congratulations to several members who have been reappointed to the Federal Advisory Committee. Excuse me. As you know, the initial appointments were made on a staggered basis, which allows for there to be continuity in terms of turnover of members over time. And several members were on one-year appointments. Those members have now been reappointed by their respective appointing bodies for another 3 years. So congratulations to Robert Waugh, who was reappointed by HHS, to Carolyn Peterson, Michael Addock, Terry O'Malley, Sasha Tremont, and Andy Trescott as well, for were reappointed by GAO. So thank you again. We look forward to all the work that you will continue to do as part of your participation on the FACA. And just note that the reappointments are for three-year terms, so we'll be able to bug and bother you for a little while longer. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Elise. And we will now turn it over to our co-chairs, Carolyn and Robert.
Good morning. Thanks, Lauren. I will review the agenda, and then we will do an approval of the October meeting minutes. This morning, we have three presentations. We have first Data Brief 42, Electronic Health Record Adoption and Interoperability Among U.S. Skilled Nursing Facilities and Home Health Agencies in 2017. That will be presented by Talisha Searcy, Data Analysis Bureau Chief of the Office of Technology at ONC. Then Erin, Mary, and I will present an update on the annual report work group's work so far. And that will be followed by an interoperability standards priorities task force update, focusing on referrals and care coordination draft recommendations from Ken Kawamoto and Stephen Lane. We'll have a period for public comment, and then we will adjourn. I'll now pass the baton to Robert for review and approval of the October meeting minutes.
Thank you, Carolyn. Good morning, everyone, and happy holidays to everyone as well. You've had the meeting minutes from our October meeting distributed to you, and at this point, want to ask if anybody has any additions, corrections, or comments on those minutes that were distributed. Hearing none, then I'll take a vote to approve the October meeting minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? All right. With that, the meeting minutes are approved for our previous meeting. Again, thanks to all who put together those minutes. They're high detailed minutes, so appreciate the level of work it takes to compile those. With that, I think we'll turn it back over for presentation of Data Brief 42. Is that correct?
That is correct. And we do have Talisha on the line, correct?
Correct.
Okay, the floor is yours.
Wonderful. Good morning, everyone, and happy holidays. So again, my name is Talisha Searcy, and I am the branch chief for the Data Analysis Branch in the Office of Technology at ONC. And today I'm going to present new data on the use of EHRs as well as interoperability amongst skilled nursing facilities as well as home health agencies. And so do I have control of the slides or?
We just ask this to advance, we'll control for you.
Perfect. Okay, great. So if we could go to the first slide. Excellent. So one of the reasons why my team has been really focused on trying to understand how long-term care and post-acute care providers are engaging in health IT adoption as well as interoperability is that they are a critical piece of the care continuum. In 2015, 49% of hospitals reported that they electronically sent summary of care records to long-term care providers. However, in most recent data, we found that hospitals reported that that there is still a major barrier in electronic exchange and the fact that their exchange partners lack the capability to receive data. So they could send summary of care records out, but depending on who their partner is, they may not be able to receive that information, either because they don't have an EHR or because their technology doesn't possess the capability to receive.
Also, there's recent legislation, the Improving Medicare Post-Acute Care Transformation Act, say that 10 times fast, or the IMPACT Act, that calls for reporting on measures related to transferring health information for skilled nursing facilities, inpatient rehab facilities, as well as long-term care hospitals and home health agencies. Please keep in mind that LTPAC, or long-term post-acute care providers, were not eligible to participate in the meaningful use program, nor are they going to be able to participate in the promoting interoperability program. Next slide. So we partnered with IQVIA to develop a 10-question telephone survey. It was fielded between September and November of 2017, and the survey was completed by 1,000 self-identified skilled nursing facilities as well as 1,004 home health agencies. And these facilities were verified as skilled nursing as well as home health agencies using CMS data as well. Next slide. So what we found was that EHR adoption rates were higher among home health agencies compared to SNFs. In 2017, about 78% of home health agencies reported that they had an EHR, compared to 66% of skilled nursing facilities. And so there is a statistically significant difference between home health agencies and SNFs, and that home health agencies have a higher rate of EHR adoption. Next slide. So what we asked ourselves was, okay, we see that there's adoption happening. How are they using, or how are these facilities actually using their electronic health records? And what we found was that a majority of home health agencies and SNFs use their EHRs for medication management purposes. Specifically, 98% of home health agencies reported that they use their EHR to reconcile patient medications, and almost all reported that they use their EHR to record patient meds. Similarly, SNFs, about 87% reported that they use their EHR to record patient medications, and 83% reported that they use their EHR to reconcile patient meds. Next slide. So the main question that we asked ourselves was, how are home health agencies and SNFs engaging in interoperable health information exchange? And the way that we define this is we have four domains. One is, can you send electronically patient health information to an organization that is outside of your own? Can you receive information that is sent to you from an organization that is outside of your own electronically? Can you query or can you find or search for information outside of your organization? And can you integrate external information received into your EHR? We also care about the extent to which facilities report that they have information available from electronically available from outside sources. And what we found was that home health agencies were more likely than SNFs to engage in each domain of interoperability. And again, those domains are sending, receiving, finding, and integrating. And about 50% of home health agencies reported that they can send information to sources outside of their own, as well as receive information. About 36% reported that they can receive or integrate information received, and 41% reported that they can find information. They can find information when searching for information outside of their organization. And about 50% of home health agencies reported, or I'm sorry, 55% reported that they have information electronically available from outside sources at the point of care, compared to 48% of SNFs. Now, one thing that is important to note is that integration has typically lagged behind, not just for long-term care providers, but also for non-federal acute care hospitals, as well as office-based physicians. So that integration and query is something that we've been monitoring some time to see how, in other settings, to see how those aspects of interoperability advance. Next slide. So then we wanted to know, okay, so we know that they have EHRs, and we know that they're engaging in the four domains of interoperability, but what exactly are the other technologies that they may possess that might help to further their exchange of patient health information? So we examined the extent to which they reported that they not only had an EHR, but participated in a health information exchange organization, or if they have read-only access, so they could read or view another facility's electronic health record to get information about their patients, but they can't modify that record. And so what we found was about 32% of home health agencies reported that they use an EHR alone, compared to 37% of SNFs. But when we looked at the number of facilities that use an EHR, a health information exchange organization, as well as have read-only access, what we found was that about 20% of home health agencies reported that they have access to all three methods, compared to 8% of SNFs. Additionally, when we looked at who could have access to their EHR or provide read-only access, we saw that about 19% of home health agencies reported that they have EHR and read-only access, compared to 17% of SNFs. Next slide, please. So then we wanted to know, okay, so are those facilities that report that they have these different methods of exchange, are they more likely to be able to engage in the various domains of interoperability? And what we found is that SNFs that use an EHR, HEOs, and had read-only access were twice as likely to have clinical information from outside organizations electronically available than SNFs that only use an EHR. And so I just ask for folks to focus on that last row where it is EHR and HEO and read-only access. And you could see home health agencies that can do all three, about 94% report that they have the ability to query or to search for information outside of their organization. Similarly, 74% of SNFs report that they can query, and about 82% report that they can send. One thing that is interesting to see is that about 68% of SNFs that report that they can do all three report that they have information available electronically from outside sources at the point of care. Next slide. Another thing that we were really interested in understanding is how home health agencies may leverage mobile technology to provide care. Keep in mind, home health agencies, their workers or providers are often on the move to see patients. And so when we asked home health agencies, what we found was about 72% reported that they use mobile technology during patient visits. And by mobile technology, we mean smartphones, tablets, that kind of thing. And of those that reported yes, 85% reported that they can use that mobile technology to directly enter data into their EHR. Next slide. We also asked about telehealth capability. Again, keeping in mind that in the home health realm, a number of folks are moving around and they may be remotely engaging with their patients. And what we found was about 4 out of 10 home health agencies use telehealth technology to keep track of patients' health between in-person visits. It's also important to keep in mind that there were no differences between home health agencies that perhaps were in rural or urban or were private or government or nonprofit entities. So use of telehealth did not vary based on those characteristics. Next slide. Okay, so in summary, EHR use is common among home health agencies and SNFs, with a majority report in both categories reporting that they have an EHR. Home health agencies and SNFs most commonly use their EHR to exchange health information. Those facilities that use health information exchange organizations and had read-only access in addition to their EHRs were more likely to have information electronically available at the point of care than those that use an EHR alone. One quarter of home health agencies and one third of SNFs did not use EHRs or other tools to enable electronic health information exchange. And nearly 40% of home health agencies use telehealth technology to keep track of patients' health between in-person visits. And 3 out of 4 home health agencies use mobile technology to collect patient data during visits. Last slide. I'm happy to take any questions that you may have. Also, our team is finalizing lots of analysis related to non-federal acute care hospitals, and we would like to come back and share those results with you as well. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about this presentation.
Great. Thanks so much, Talisha. We do, for the members, committee members, we do have a few minutes for questions.
I have a question. This is Leslie Leonard. Were these results surprising to you? And what do you think that the implications of the results are?
So we were a little surprised. So last year, we completed a similar survey just for the skilled nursing facilities and had somewhat similar results in terms of EHR adoption rates. However, for the home health agencies, this was our first time collecting data on them, and to see how much more they leverage health IT was a little surprising. I wasn't exactly sure. I thought they would be a little bit more comparable to the SNFs and not necessarily exceed them. One of the key takeaways, at least that I have, is the importance of having a business case for the use of health IT and interoperability. For home health agencies, it's clear the providers are on the move. They are going from patient to patient. So having mobile technology, being able to electronically exchange, would make sense. Because there's a clear use case for it. But I do think that it would behoove us to do a little bit more of a deeper dive to really try to understand a little bit more about how long-term post-acute care providers are leveraging technology and what are some of the barriers that they're experiencing to exchange.
This is John Kansky. In the broader healthcare market, not specific to LTPAC, I'll admit that I hold the opinion that we talk about using multiple ways to access data from outside an organization, kind of an and not or approach, meaning that the EHR vendors offer certain capabilities, HIEs or HIOs offer certain capabilities, et cetera. And it's interesting, this data seems to support the idea that whether we like it or not, because it is a little messier and it's not particularly elegant, but when an organization is using multiple ways to access the data, they are ultimately successful in accessing more data, or more organizations have access to that data. Is that your observation as well?
Yes, and we're seeing something similar. We are releasing a data brief very soon looking at non-federal acute care hospitals and the methods that they're using to exchange, including participating in national health information exchange networks, and we're seeing something similar. Those that participate in PEOs, or, you know, as well as have an EHR, or maybe they're participating in multiple networks, are in a better position to be able to be interoperable or have the information that they need. So we are seeing that in some other settings as well.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Denise Webb. I have a quick question. On the 1,000 SNFs and 1,004 home health agencies that responded, do you have an idea about what percentage of the total number of skilled nursing facilities and home health agencies that represented? Maybe you said and I missed it.
Hold on one. I had it. I'm so sorry. I had it pulled up. One second.
I mean, that kind of gives perspective.
Yes, it's about if and I'll triple check my numbers. It's about 1% in each category. There's about I think the last data I see is that there's about 15,000, about 12,000 home health, and about I would say about 15,000 or so skilled nursing facilities. I would need to triple check that. But I can say that based on the calculations that we've done and looking at the CMS data as well, our results are generalizable to the population.
Okay.
But I can double check on the denominator for you.
Hi, this is Christina. It appears from the data, well, thank you for the presentation first. And then looking at the data, there is a significantly higher interoperability percentage for those that are actually using the HIOs. Do we understand why the HIOs aren't being used for SNFs and home health agencies? Like, is it a business case? Is it a lack of availability?
Unfortunately, we in this survey, we were limited to 10 questions, so we weren't able to do a deeper dive into, you know, some of these questions that definitely make sense for us to better understand. One of the things that we are doing in trying to understand how health information exchange organizations are operating and who are their client base, we are in partnership with Julia Adler Milstein in developing a survey of health information exchange organizations. And we are also, you know, funding available, would be interested in the future in building on these surveys to try to ask a few more questions that could kind of help us to better understand various aspects of use and what some of the limitations of use might be.
This is Lauren. I just want to acknowledge we do have a couple of members in the queue with their hands up, Stephen and Michael. So why don't we go to Stephen and Michael for perhaps maybe for our last couple of questions.
All right, this is Stephen Lane again. Thank you so much for the presentation. I know that your focus is really on evaluating the sector and presenting the data, so maybe this is a question for some of the other folks who are on from the ONC, but what plans do we have to try to close this gap that we can now see in the skilled nursing area, where we know that we've always known that there's been a gap there compared to providers and hospitals, but now we even see this gap compared to home health agencies that presumably, you know, work really pretty much in the same spheres. What are our plans for trying to help them along?
I defer to my colleagues that are on the line, but I do know that the Impact Act is really going to, although there may not be resources devoted to it, there may be definitely a driver there to help increase interoperable exchange amongst LTPACs. The Act requires CMS to make interoperable standardized patient assessment and quality measure data and data on resource use and other measures. So there's definitely some movement that CMS is leading to try to at least through implementing the Impact Act, I think there may be some implications in terms of advancing interoperability amongst LTPACs as a result. But again, I defer to others on the call from ONC or CMS who might shed some additional light on that.
So, Felicia, maybe we can circle back for any additional information from the ONC side on that. And Michael, did you have a question? Are you on mute? Or did we lose connection with Michael? We'll see if we can get Michael back on the line. With that, any other comments or questions before we conclude this portion of the agenda? Okay. With that, Tawisha, I want to thank you for your time today and look forward to hearing from you again in the future.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you. And with that, we will now turn to a report from Carolyn and Aaron on the HITECH annual report that is quickly approaching us. Aaron and Carolyn, you have the floor.
Thank you, and good morning. Once again, I want to wish everybody a happy holiday season, and you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to present this morning to the HITECH to walk through some of the items that we have identified for us to talk through as a larger group and to really consider and work through in our thought processes. As we've been saying in our previous presentations of the HITECH, this is a work in progress, so this is definitely a lot of draft items that we want to talk through with you all and really get feedback on. I also want to take a second and really acknowledge the phenomenal work by the ONC team that behind the scenes have just done a Herculean job and an amazing quality effort, which I'm sure you all will appreciate. Carolyn, any comments you want to add?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to update the full HITECH on our work and look forward to answering your questions.
Fantastic. Okay, let's go on to the next slide, please. All right, so I'm going to, again, introduce this topic and the item that we have to present to you, and Carolyn and I will fill in the details here. So our annual report, work group update, we're obviously going to go through what is going on now, so where are we with the development cycle, sort of the outline of the section on our HITECH progress, and then sort of that insights from a deeper dive into privacy and security target area, and then kind of work through what our next items are. Next slide. These are the folks that are participatory on this work group, and again, I give a lot of credit to the individuals from the federal side. The ONC team have just done an amazing job. Next slide. All right, so our scope. This work group was to inform, contribute, and review the draft and final versions of the HITECH annual report to be submitted to the Secretary and Congress each year. As part of that report, the work group will track the ongoing HITECH progress. In detail, we're supposed to be providing specific feedback on the content of the report as required by 21st Century Cures Act, including an analysis of our HITECH progress related to the priority target areas, that assessment of health IT infrastructure and advancements in the priority target areas, an analysis of the existing gaps in policies and resources for the priority target areas, and then last but not least, ideas for potential HITECH activities to address any of the identified gaps. Next slide. All right, so sort of that update of where we are with things. Next slide. All right, so from an outline perspective, we're going to go through and just do sort of the summary here, overview. This is sort of a HITECH progress in FY18. What have we accomplished, which is pretty numerous. What does our health IT infrastructure landscape analysis look like? Sort of where we are with things from the gap analysis, which we've presented to you before. And then we initially presented sort of the recommendations on addressing some of those health IT infrastructure gaps. But we're also, this is really what we want to focus on today with you all, is looking at that and taking the feedback we learned in October and really synthesizing that out for additional comment to you all. And then, you know, for additional HITECH activities, we really don't haven't identified anything for FY18, obviously, since it's really coming close now to the end. But there are items there that we really want to talk through going forward. Next slide. All right, so sort of the outline of the section on the HITECH progress. Next slide. All right, so from the Trust Exchange Framework Task Force, the overarching charge was for the Trust Exchange Framework to develop and advance recommendations on Part A, Part B of the draft TEF to inform the development of the final TEF framework and common agreement, the TEFCA. Our specific charge was to make specific recommendations of the language included in minimum required terms and conditions in Part B, including recognized coordinating entity, the definitions and requirements of a qualified HIN, QHIN, permitted use and disclosures, and, of course, privacy and security. And from accomplishments in FY18, we held 9 public meetings of the task force and transmitted 26 recommendations to the National Coordinator for Health IT. Next slide. From the US CDI task force, the overarching charge was to review and provide feedback on the US CDI structure and progress. Our specific charge was to provide recommendations on the following mechanisms and approach to receive stakeholder feedback regarding data class priorities, proposed categories to which data classes would be promoted, and objective characteristics for promotion, how the US CDI would be expanded and by how much, and any factors associated with the frequency with which it would be published. From an accomplishments perspective, we held 9 public meetings of the task force, and we transmitted 9 recommendations to the National Coordinator for Health IT. Next slide. From the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force, our overarching charge was to make recommendations on priority uses of health IT and the associated standards and implementation specifications that support such uses. Our specific charge was the ISP Task Force will make recommendations on the following: priority uses of health IT consistent with the Cures Act, the standards and implementation specifications that best support and may need to be developed for each identified priority, and subsequent steps for industry and government action, and thus publish a report summarizing its findings. Our accomplishments in FY18, we held 6 public meetings of the task force. We produced an initial list of priority uses for discussion. Next slide. On the policy framework, the 21st Century Cures Act states that in general, the Health IT Advisory Committee shall recommend to the National Coordinator a policy framework for adoption by the Secretary consistent with the strategic plan under Section 3001 for advancing the target areas described in the subsection. Each policy framework shall seek to prioritize achieving advancements in the target areas specified in subparagraph B of paragraph 2 and may, to the extent of this section, incorporate policy recommendations made by the Health IT Policy Committee as it exists before the date of the enactment of the 21st Century Cures Act. So what did we do in FY18? The HITECH transmitted a recommended policy framework to the ONC for activities to the National Coordinator for Health IT. Next slide. So the HITECH annual work group, this presentation, what we've been working on. The HITECH formed a work group to inform, contribute, and review the draft and final versions of the HITECH annual report to be submitted to the HHS Secretary and Congress each fiscal year. As part of that, we'll help track the ongoing HITECH progress. We consist of 5 HITECH members, 2 of whom serve as work group co-chairs. So our accomplishments this year, we established the scope of the work group's activities in support of the development of the FY18 annual report. We held 3 public meetings of the work group, and we're updating the HITECH full committee on progress, which started on 9/5 and continues even to today. Next slide. So our discussion question for HITECH members for this section, are there any questions and comments about the draft section on the HITECH progress and what we've accomplished this year? And did we, you know, incidentally or accidentally leave out any important areas that you feel that we definitely need to highlight on? So I'll pause there and ask for that feedback. All right, barring no feedback, Lauren, I'm going to move on to the next section then. Next slide. All right, and this is where I'll turn to Carolyn, please, to pick it up.
Thanks, Aaron, for that very succinct and clear review of where we've been. So one of the things that the work group was interested in doing was getting kind of a deeper dive into the privacy and security priority target area. I think we've all been hearing in the news about a lot of breaches and things like some issues with social media platforms sharing information in ways that people didn't expect, and so forth. So we thought it would be relevant to get a closer look at some of the potential issues specific to healthcare. And to do that, we convened some experts to come and share with us their insights. Next slide, please. So we had these experts at our meeting last month on the 9th. Specifically, we had experts from the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics presenting on health information privacy beyond HIPAA. We had someone from the National Institute of Standards and Technology presenting on their cybersecurity framework. And we had a presentation from the HHS Office for Civil Rights on cybersecurity tools. And then we convened and discussed these presentations within the work group at a meeting last week on December 4. Next slide, please. We've identified several opportunities for future action next year and perhaps beyond within the work group. I'll be sharing those with you today, and we'll be looking for some feedback on things that you would like to see in the annual report and perhaps other actions and opportunities for future activity. We felt a couple of really important opportunities were first to consider what to regulate about the Internet of Things. From the NCVHS report, we have a problem that the Internet of Things turns data that was previously mostly static into data that's in motion most of the time. There are no governance structures or policies or frameworks or agreements or legal boundaries or anything that's around this data in motion. From that, we take as a suggested high-tech activity to identify areas of Internet of Things use that would benefit from guidance and examples of success in the healthcare industry. We also note a support for an education of technology users regarding privacy and security protections, including for health and other information shared on social media. Here, the problem is that while social media platforms can enable collaboration, users also are vulnerable to privacy breaches and misuse of health information. So our suggested high-tech activity is to identify educational approaches, technological mitigators, and potential regulatory solutions that offer improved privacy and security protections. Next slide, please. We've also identified a number of other opportunities. Increased uniformity of information sharing policies across states. For example, we could look at implications of the California Consumer Privacy Act of 2018. In that area, we might consider looking at the federal role in setting guidelines for exchange of data across states. Another opportunity would be support for widespread adoption of cybersecurity frameworks. Here there are a couple of suggested activities to consider the impact of nationwide adoption of cybersecurity frameworks and also to delineate some cybersecurity accountability for data by role. Next slide, please. Another opportunity would be granular levels of consent to share and disclose information. The current situation is that consent form collection and storage practices are static and not aligned with this data in motion, in the sense that the consent doesn't flow with the data. The design and use of consent forms need to become more user-centered. A suggested high-tech activity here would be to undertake a review of emerging consent approaches and the technologies that underpin them and make recommendations for improvement of current consent approaches. Next slide, please. Some other opportunities that the work group has identified would be to address implications of the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation and Privacy Shield, education about HIPAA and confidentiality of substance use disorder patient records, that's 42 CFR Part 2, the implications of these regulations, and to continue to improve patient matching when data is being shared. Next slide, please. So our discussion question here is, what other suggested high-tech activities you would like to bring forward or have us to include in the annual report for this privacy and security target area? And Robert, I'll ask you to acknowledge the questioners.
We may have lost Robert on the audio, but I do see that Sasha has a hand up.
Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Sasha. So I noticed that just this week, there's actually a request for information out about potential revisions to HIPAA, which seems to align nicely with some of the privacy target areas that you mentioned, Carolyn, including confusion about what HIPAA currently permits or areas where there might be restrictions that haven't evolved with sort of the capabilities over time that healthcare providers and patients would like to take advantage of. Would that be an opportunity for the committee or a subgroup of the committee to review and consider offering recommendations?
Yes. I saw that announcement come out yesterday because of some guidelines around federal reporting and making information available ahead of meetings. We were not able to go in and update the slides because of the time situation there. But absolutely, that is something that the group could undertake. We would need to make that an activity taking place at the January meeting, I believe, because I'm thinking the deadline for submitting comments is sometime in February.
February 11.
Yeah, I was going to say I don't have that announcement right in front of me, but it's something we would need to do quite quickly. But certainly, if that's something that HITAC is interested in, Robert and I can work with Lauren and the ONC team to ensure that that's on the January agenda.
Yeah, this is Aaron. You know, Sasha, I think that's a phenomenal idea, and I appreciate that. And something as a thematic item in this report, you'll see is that we always try to encourage us to weigh and work in with our other federal agency partners. So I think it's a great tip of the hat to that, as well as activity that is important. So good idea.
Thanks. Next, I think we have Valerie hand up.
Good morning. Thank you. This is not exactly a question, really more just I want to commend the work group for identifying privacy and security as a priority target area. I strongly support doing some more work on increasing uniformity across states for sharing. I think that that's one of the biggest challenges in TEFCA, and I would love to see us try and do more to promote cross-state exchange. And I strongly believe, too, that it would behoove us to do more work on Part 2. I know that that's been a debate that's raged for many years, but I think it's extremely important. So just wanted to weigh in, and I think Sasha's idea on the RFI that just came out relating to HIPAA is another area to weigh in on. So I strongly support expending some energy here. So thank you so much.
Great.
Thank you, Valerie.
Thanks. Denise Webb, you have your hand up?
Yes, thank you. I was just going to suggest, and this relates to the area of identifying areas of Internet of Things use that would benefit from guidance, and actually I think that kind of dovetails into the changes for HIPAA as well, but I think it's going to be really important for us to identify groups that are working on these topics to present and to partner with to formulate our recommendations. And one group I was thinking of was the Karen Alliance, which has the involvement of the former national coordinators and quite a few people across the stakeholder groups in the health IT industry. And I know they've been doing a lot of work on a trust framework, particularly around the use of apps by consumers and consumer-directed exchange.
Hey, thanks, Denise. I recall seeing something released about their work quite recently, maybe in the last 3 to 4 weeks. That's certainly something that we can take into account as we prepare the annual report and also keep on the list of things to look at for 2019.
Yeah, and they also did a project, I can't remember the group they did it with, around consent, and automated consent.
Great, I'm making a note of that for the report. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Next we have Terry O'Malley.
Hi, and I too would like to commend the group for targeting privacy and security, and I think you've selected some excellent targets. And I was just wondering if you'd focus more in on sort of unique patient identification, because I think the interdependencies with that and consent and authorized use and how that all fits under TEFCA you know, becomes sort of the keystone in my mind of those relationships. And so, you know, is there any way to find out some more thinking about how we could end up with, in effect, a national registry of patient identification, even though it's not a national registry? You know, whether it's a combination of local registries somehow governed, but I think we need to get to some sort of unique patient identifier that's available across all settings. And I'm just wondering about more work in that corner of the world. Thanks.
I'm adding that to the list of topics to explore and try to at least mention in the annual report, if not have a broader presentation. And thank you for that. It's certainly relevant to some of the other issues that we've brought up as possible areas for activity.
Great. Thanks, Greg. I think the last question is from Kim Kalawana.
Great. Thank you. So the one area I'd suggest is around the new technologies around fire and things like Smart on Fire CDS hooks. And the way those technologies work right now, access is very broad based. So the way it's set up is if you want any information about the patient's demographics, say the patient's gender or how old they are, it's all or nothing, where just to share that, you need to share things like, you know, their name, all the email addresses you have on file, all their phone numbers you have on file, where they live, what their marital status is, that kind of thing. And I think that's a place to look at. I think it's along the lines of, there was a recommendation around more granular consents. It's the notion of, you know, only sharing what's reasonable to share in a given context. And then, you know, it's related to things like if you have something that needs to track someone's weight, the current standards are such that in order to give a third-party app vendor, say, access to the patient's weight, you also need to give it access to the patient's, you know, sexually transmitted disease results, things like that. So I think there's ways to potentially resolve this, and I think it would be recommendation would be to add a few things. One is in the area where there was a notion of saying, hey, let's have better education of consumers. It was in the context of social media kind of use, but especially with the apps that patients are going to be getting, I think it would be useful to look at how to improve the education patients get on the current state of the technology, so that instead of saying, for example, do you consent to give access to your demographics, with perhaps limited information, to say, well, what you're actually consenting to is that any, you know, where you live and your email address and your, you know, work phone number, if you've listed it with your provider, and whether you're married or single or divorced, et cetera, that'll be shared. And observations, similar kind of thing, to say any kind of lab that you know, your systems may have will be shared with this provider, that kind of thing. So one is education with folks. Another is seeing if there's ways we can tighten this up technology-wise. For example, by using fire profiles, we can say if you actually don't need to know all that, all you need is usually date of birth and gender. You know, we can use a profile to say that is all that will be shared. And I think thirdly, getting in touch with NCVHS and getting some guidance on, you know, what we can do to make sure we're compliant with current HIPAA or updated HIPAA. I think it's a solvable problem, but it's something that's probably not going to just happen on its own.
Those are great suggestions, Ken. Thanks for bringing those forward. I've made some notes, and I may follow up with you offline just to be sure I'm clear about specifically what you're referring to, so we can ensure we get that into the report.
Great. Thanks.
Correctly. Thank you.
Great. Any other comments, questions, suggestions for the committee? All right. Well, Aaron and Carolyn, thank you very much for this great work and to all your committee for all the efforts put forward on this issue. As we've noted before, the work groups and the committees are where most of the work of this committee gets done. So thank you all for your time and efforts in that regard.
Great. Thanks, Robert. We do have a couple of slides to follow that just quickly summarize the remaining meetings and activities around the report, if we can transition. So next steps, the work group is already working on the draft report, which we will be continuing to review and edit over the holidays. We will be sharing that draft report with the full HITAC in January. We will have a full committee review report and suggest edits of that. And then the full HITAC will approve the revised report. HITAC will then move that final report to the national coordinator, who will bring that to the HHS Secretary in Congress. Next slide, sure. Please. So for the work group, we are working on the report right now, and then we'll meet to discuss it on January 10. That is a public meeting, so there will be an opportunity for any of you who want to listen in to participate. We encourage that. Then through the winter and into the spring, we'll do whatever other work is needed, requested by ONC. And then later in the spring, we will start on the fiscal year 19 report. Next slide, please. So the review schedule for the full committee will be that in January, we will be at our in-person meeting in Washington, D.C. We will have that review of the annual report. And then in February, we will review and approve the revised draft of that report, the revisions being what came out of the January meeting. And then later, we will submit that to HHS Secretary and to Congress. Next slide, please. So I know we're a little bit behind on time, but if there are any other procedural questions about what we're doing or HITAC's role, I'm happy to address those now.
Caroline, I think Clem has his hand up as well.
I didn't ask a question the last round because I thought it was constrained to privacy and security, but if this is a big report, we still haven't gotten back to what additional observations or variables are we going to encourage be part of what's required to be delivered. And one of my pet ones is X-ray reports. And is that going to ever happen, that we will we started all the meetings with that, and we didn't really come to conclusions, I don't think.
We will certainly review the draft with an eye toward where we can be sure that that's included.
Okay.
I'm not sure that it fits in specifically with the privacy and security.
No, it doesn't. That's
today.
Why I didn't bring it.
But yes, as we've gone along, we've been taking notes, as has the ONC annual report team that's helping us pull this together, and we do want to be sure that we include feedback that's been brought forward.
Okay, thank you.
Attack. Yep.
Other questions and comments for Caroline and Aaron? Again, thank you for your work. I think this part will switch over to the next topic, which is the Interoperability Standards and Priorities Task Force. And we'll turn it over to the two co-chairs, Ken and Stephen.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, so I'll get us started. This task force has been pretty active and busy. Since our last update, we've been focusing on closed-loop referrals and care coordination, and have been discussing the draft recommendations. So what we'd like to do today is to update folks on our draft recommendations in this area and spend most of the time on that and getting feedback. And then we'd like to give a recap of orders and results in terms of our previous recommendations, and we've had a few additional recommendations come forward from task force members, so we'd like to review those as well. Next slide, please. Okay, since October, we've had 5 meetings on this topic, and we've gotten a lot of presentations from a number of experts, including Brett Andreessen from ONC, Louis Moss from the Direct Project, Matt Menning from the American Medical Association, and Brett McQuard from the Wave One Associates. And what we were really trying to do is to get a better understanding of what are the current and being worked on and potential future standards associated with this topic on closed-loop referral and care coordination. As I noted, in subsequent discussions, we also identified 2 additional priorities that for the orders and results topic, which we presented to this group in October and which we'd like to go over. Next slide, please. Okay, so similar to what we did with the orders and results, we tiered our recommendations, and this is just a draft, so we'd like folks' input from the full HITAC. And these are the top-level descriptions of what we, as the task force, came up with in terms of priority 1 and priority 2 recommendations. I won't go into these, as Stephen will be going into each of these in detail. But we basically have both specific to closed-loop referrals and also related to, we also came across some cross-cutting recommendations as well. Next slide, please. And these are some of the additional general observations. We'll go into this in further detail as well a little bit later. But essentially, as we came into the second topic of focus, moving from orders and results to referral and care coordination, we found a number of issues that seemed that they were cross-cutting across use cases and clinical priorities. These included the similarity of requirements often between these areas, the need to consider a wide variety of use cases, including transitions of care, not just referrals, such as across outpatient ED and LTPAC facility transfers, the cost and complexity associated with having what we call custom interoperability solutions or solutions that are use case specific, and where there might be potentially some benefits to be gained from using a common approach across use cases, the notion that when there's no clear single best approach to interoperability in an area, there's a desire to do some harmonization to avoid having support for multiple approaches. Next slide. Okay, Stephen, back to you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ken, and thank you to the entire HITAC for the opportunity to come and present this work. We did not include at the beginning of our deck a listing of all of our members, but I really want to take a moment and just acknowledge all the work that people have been doing. We've had great participation. Our task force has 22 members, 16 of whom hail from the HITAC itself, but we have 6 additional members that really round out the representation and I think bring additional voices to the table. We have representation from large IT companies like Google and Apple. We have Cerner, which is obviously an important large EHR vendor represented. And then also we have a clinical practice with a homegrown EHR, One Medical Group, which I think really brings a unique perspective to our discussions, as well as a healthcare data quality solutions provider, clinical architecture represented. So it's a group with a lot of voices, and there's been great engagement that's contributed to these recommendations. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. And thank you, Ken, for setting this up. What I'm going to do is go through in a bit more detail the observations that we've made and the recommendations that have come out of them, and then some acknowledgement of where we see that there may be policy levers that could be pulled to try to implement some of these recommendations. So the first major area was really what we started on, which was that closed-loop referrals and the communications that support them are really challenging in our current interoperability landscape. And we are aware of the good work that's been done on the 360X project. We have all seen demonstrations, or at least there have been great demonstrations of this at ONC meetings. We were able to learn from the key architects of that project where they are, which is really ready to start piloting that, as well as some of their observations about where they think this needs to go. So we do feel that it's important for the ONC to encourage and support pilots of that project, to look at that across a number of different settings and using different technology solutions. And then there were also clearly opportunities to evolve and enhance that approach. And we looked at some specific areas, expansion of the use cases. Initially, it's really designed to support fairly straightforward ambulatory referrals, but clearly the same methodology can support referrals in and out of acute care, LTPAC, home care, et cetera. It also, there are opportunities to use it to use the basic technology solutions and architecture to support prior authorization, which is often a key part of the referral process. And to, as part of that, the need to support the transmission of insurance information as that is important for prior auth and also for supporting real-time scheduling. One of the key components of 360X is that it requires patient identity management, and this is an area that we feel that the ONC should continue to support, as this is important for the referrals to be tracked all the way through to completion and the closing of that loop. One of the challenges that we identified as we went through this is that there are, as Ken suggested, multiple solutions sometimes to some of the problems that need to be solved as these technologies are rolled out. One of the key points that we identified in looking at referrals and care coordination was the need for message context. And there are a number of different groups that have worked on this, and there are multiple solutions out there, and we do feel that these need to be harmonized or that there needs to be an acknowledgement that there are multiple ways to do something and those need to be supported. We also, and you'll see this as a motif through all of this, we're all living in a time where we have established methodologies for exchange using documents. While FHIR is fast evolving into this workspace, so we do feel that there are FHIR-based approaches that can be applied to the provide the functionality that is called for in the 360X and that is required for closed-loop referrals, and we feel that those should be supported and that pilots should be done, including the FHIR-based Argonaut scheduling protocols. Next slide, please. So some of the policy actions, as mentioned, that would be support for 360X pilots, support for the FHIR-based efforts to address these closed-loop referral and care coordination messaging needs, and to include defined baseline closed-loop referral capabilities as requirements for certification. Our group is very sensitive about requiring technologies for certification, but we really feel that the functionality and the capabilities that that are needed to support referrals and care coordination are critical. While, as Ken mentioned, sometimes it's hard to know what is the exact right technology at a given time. We also feel that CMS has an opportunity to align their programs to support these closed-loop referral processes as they become more doable within the technology solutions that are available. Next slide, please. So the next item that we focused on and we took a pretty deep dive into this, is the acknowledgement that there are no standards now for the clinical and administrative data that should be collected prior to referring a patient from one point of care to another, from a referring provider to a consulting provider. And we felt strongly that it would be valuable for work to be done in this area, a collaboration likely between multiple groups that could lead to evolving standards of what information is required or is recommended prior to referring a patient, that this could streamline the process, lower costs, improve quality, and make it more satisfying for both the patients and their clinicians. And we see this as ideally being developed on a specialty-by-specialty basis, and within each specialty, looking at first the most common reasons for referral. So we reached out to a number of folks, including the folks at the AMA in their Integrated Health Model Initiative, looking to see what might be the appropriate home for this work. We identified a number of groups that might have a stake in this, and we would hope that the ONC would help to convene those groups and move this kind of work forward. Next slide. So here again, there's a recommendation to convene stakeholders to look at this with exemplars in both the CCDA and FHIR, how to move this information that's necessary to support referrals and to include best practice guidance for how this data is going to be displayed between systems. Here again, we thought there was an opportunity to align the clinical referral processes with work that we all anticipate being done on the US CDI and how to get the relevant profiles of US CDI, that is to say the content that's called for in US CDI, to be sent as part of the clinical referral workflows. Next slide. Going on, we had a number of additional recommendations that we felt were a really top priority. One was the support of clinician-to-clinician patient-specific messaging. This is available today using the DIRECT protocol, but it's really not well utilized in the community of clinicians. It hasn't been adopted consistently across IT systems or across organizations, and we felt that this should be supported and incentivized. We also looked into how FHIR-based approaches could be leveraged to support this functionality. Here again, separating out the functionality that we think is important from the specific technology standards that allow it, but that's an important area. Provider directories are obviously critical to support this kind of messaging, and we acknowledge that a lot of work has already gone on in supporting provider directories, but this really needs to continue so that any clinician can find other clinicians, find their address, if it's a direct address, et cetera, so that this communication of referrals and care coordination messaging can continue across organizations. We did speak of the requirement for governance in this area and the potential role of the TEFCA. We made reference back to the recommendations of the TEFCA task force, which did specifically call out that the Trusted Exchange framework should establish a floor capability for the on-ramp provided by QHINs to be for all forms of EHI exchange, including but not limited to query-based exchange and push-based exchange models. So this notion of including push-based exchange in the TEFCA has been discussed by prior task forces, and our task force also felt that would be very helpful. Next slide. In terms of the second order priorities, we did speak of the desirability and really the importance of automatically incorporating relevant information into patients' EHRs. That today we know that so many referrals and so much care coordination messaging is occurring using the fax machine. We're all aware of the desirability on the part of CMS and now whole other countries for doing away with the fax machine. But clearly it's important that this messaging be implemented in a way that it allows discrete data to move between systems. We also dug in a bit to the area of patient-clinician messaging, acknowledging the fact that today this is mostly done inside of EHR-tethered patient portals, but there is a lot of work being done by personal health record developers, and there is work being done looking at how patient-clinician secure messaging could be supported using the direct protocol and potentially even using FHIR. And we've heard from patients that they want to have a flexibility in choosing the apps that they want to use to communicate with providers, as well as being able to manage all those communications in a similar way, as opposed to having to jump between portals to communicate with different members of their healthcare team. But we also acknowledge that it was important that these solutions be integrated with established EHR workflows for clinicians in order for them to really be scalable. We can't just ask clinicians to take on a whole new workflow for each method of communication. So there's clearly work to be done here, but we felt that this was important to support care coordination generally. Next slide. All right, a couple more of what we saw as second-level priorities. One is the notion of a patient-centric, multi-stakeholder, multi-institutional care plan. Clearly, if you're talking about coordinating care, one of the real challenges is having a care plan that everyone can see, that folks can appropriately contribute to, and that can be iterated over time. Some work's been done in this area in both the FHIR and the CCDA realm, but we feel that these need to be supported and advanced, and that there are key items that belong in that care plan, such as the patient, caregiver, and family goals that need to be included. And then the last area that, or last technology that we considered in the area of care coordination was real-time text messaging, where this is being done increasingly in hospitals, but with the care teams there, but also there are use cases for using this real-time messaging in other settings, in the ambulatory setting. And so far, this has been largely untethered to EHR workflows, that the information is not consistently documented. And we felt that for care coordination to really move forward, this should be considered as well. Next slide makes reference to a policy action that could support priority 2C regarding the multi-institutional care plan, really feeling that there is need for additional research and development in this area. And that there need to be standards developed and tested so that this can be used, again, in a way that it could cross organizations, cross vendor technology solutions, and really be a patient-centric tool. Next slide. I'm going to hand it back to Ken here to talk about some additional recommendations that came up as we went through this.
Great. Okay, so Stephen talked through the primary and secondary recommendations. We also had some additional recommendations that oftentimes are cross-cutting, and it really did start surfacing as we tackled multiple priority care domains. So the first was that at least when we looked at these two, we found that there are technology needs that cross both of these, both in ordering and resulting in closed-loop referrals and care coordination. It's essentially in various ways of doing closed-loop exchanges where one party exchanges information with another and gets information back. So this made us think it would be really good, and, you know, it sort of is beyond these use cases as well. But when there are underlying similar approaches or similar patterns of health information exchange, we should try to work towards identifying opportunities for harmonization just to reduce the burden associated with managing different standards. And I think that, you know, I think the focus on burden reduction among clinicians and physicians, caregivers is really important, but I think reducing burden in terms of health IT implementers is also a good thing. In terms of transitions of care, we recommend that we identify opportunities for harmonization of, again, standards and governance for the various instances of transitions of care so that, for example, you know, referral to a specialist in the outpatient setting versus referring to a long-term care facility, et cetera. They're all basically similar in that they're transitions of care. And the idea here is let's try to avoid as much as possible having very narrow technology use cases that have different standards across them and different ways they're governed, because that, again, just adds cost and complexity. So related to that, again, is this notion of custom interoperability solutions. And the idea here is that this happens in terms of different approaches being created for individual use cases because it's just sort of the natural thing to do in that when you're working on trying to solve a problem, the problem is big enough that just to be able to make progress and to keep your scope manageable, what you typically do is to say, okay, let's just solve this problem, acknowledging that there's other work going on. But the idea here is we should actively seek out and identify opportunities to consolidate, simplify, and render cost-effective the landscape of interoperability. Another topic that really came to the fore with this topic that we covered was that there's sometimes no clear single best approach. So this is something that we discussed at quite some length. You know, what do you do when there's potentially different ways of doing it? So, for example, direct versus FHIR, for example, or, you know, using CDAs, version 2, et cetera. The recommendation here is to avoid picking winners prematurely and then remaining open to potential alternative approaches, which may in the long run be ultimately superior, whether for that problem or when you consider various use cases like we discussed. Next slide, please. So based on this, we have some potential policy actions that could be taken that we recommend ONC consider. One is to commission efforts to identify functional overlap between standards and identify opportunities for consolidation or harmonization. This is a notion that if you're working on a particular use case, you're typically not thinking so much about, well, how does it, you know, what's the best way to harmonize this with other approaches beyond just, you know, thinking about it. To make this more concrete, for individual ONC-funded projects, we recommend ONC consider including required and or optional tasks for exploring such cross-use case harmonization and deduplication in the project scope. The notion here is that, you know, when this kind of work is done in a project, if it's not in a task, then it would simply be considered out of scope, and you will basically be not having this opportunity baked into what folks do. Another recommendation is to convene HL7, Direct Trust, Argonaut, TAFCA participants, EHR vendors, and other relevant stakeholders to establish a standards evolution path to allow applicable functionalities currently available in Direct to also function in FHIR. So there seemed to be fairly good consensus that the direct-based referral approaches being currently worked on look very promising and have a shorter time to market in terms of availability. But there's a lot of excitement around FHIR, and you know, we really should have a plan for how we may transition to sort of where we're moving as infrastructure-wise as an industry. And final recommendation was to consider developing certification criteria and associated CMS programmatic changes to allow flexible transition to the appropriate use of the fire standard. So those are our recommendations, and I will then pass it on to Stephen.
Yeah, and I just want to actually close out this segment of the presentation a little bit, saying that our task force was really charged with looking at priority uses of health information technology and the standards that exist to support those uses, and then making recommendations. So that's really what we've been focusing on. As we've gone into this, what we realize is that it's important to tease this apart a little bit, and the framework that we've come up with is trying to differentiate the important functionality that is required, separate that from the content that needs to be exchanged, and here again looking for those opportunities to align with work that will be done on USCDI, the technology standards that are needed to move that content to support those functionalities, and then also the governance, which will be required to assure that all this moves forward. So those kind of four components, functionality, content, technology standards, and governance, we really see as cross-cutting to the work that we've been doing. So I think what we wanted to do now was stop and have some discussion of our observations and recommendations and get the input of the HITACH. And then afterwards, we'll go on and provide a recap of our prior recommendations on orders and results and some additions that we want to make to those.
Karen, thanks you and Stephen for this great work again. And just as a note to the overall committee, everyone seems to catch on quickly, but please do use the raise your hand function in the Adobe Connect application. It's at the top of your screen, about a couple inches over the left. It's helpful for us to know who is raising their hand. I appreciate everyone using that. And on that topic, the first person with their hand up is Terry O'Malley.
Really? Didn't even raise my hand, but thank you, because I was going to make a comment. again, great presentation and a really complicated piece of work. So kudos to Ken and Stephen. Referring back to slide 50, which actually talked about the standard clinical data that's needed to move between a primary care physician and a specialist in the particular use case we looked at, I think it's important. What I would do is I would add an emphasis there that we ought to expand that same general process of identifying standard clinical data that's required and apply it to the transitions of care. Because given how critical transitions are, they're really the way our system holds itself together. We only really connect around the care of patients. And it's important that the information that one team needs to get from the other, the sender and the receiver, gets really standardized and complete. And you could look at transitions from anywhere to the emergency department. What does the emergency department want to get in a referral from who knows where? And similarly, what does who knows where, the PCP, the home health, the SNF, want to get back from the emergency department once they've sent the patient? And sort of wash, rinse, and repeat for all of the other transitions, you know, discharges to and from facilities, discharges from LTPAC to anywhere. So I would just put a plea that we expand the standard clinical data should be collected and add a line there for high-value transitions of care as well. Thanks.
Terry, I want to just comment. I think you make a really good point. It really speaks to what we continue to identify, which is that there are these cross-cutting issues that each of these domains we go into really relates to other domains. And while we have called this out as being needed for based on clinical specialty, I think you could also, as you say, expand that to care setting in a certain sense. Skilled nursing facility could be seen as similar to a specialty. You know, what do they need when a patient is transitioning to them, or what is needed from them when that patient is transitioning, say, to either a clinical physician subspecialist or to a hospital or to another level of care. So I think your point is really well taken. The other thing I'll say about this is that our task force did make a formal submission to the AMA's Integrated Health Model Initiative to see if they might be an appropriate organization to take on this collaboration to look at developing and maintaining some of these standards. Clearly, the AMA's focus is going to be more on physicians and physician medical specialties as opposed to what's needed for, as you say, other transitions of care. But we have, we're waiting to hear back from them as to whether they have an interest in that. But clearly, we think that ONC should help to figure out where the appropriate home is for this work.
This is Robert. If you need help with the AMA, I'm happy to push on that regard as well.
I don't know if my hand raising is not working, but I've had it up.
No, Clem, I see you.
Okay, all right.
Go ahead, Clem.
Well, there's a couple things. One, I would be cautious about the harmonization word. It's sweet and pretty and everybody agrees to do it, but it's been 20 years and no one does it. I think we should talk about unification if we want to make it easy, not harmonization. And be honest, it hasn't happened. Secondly, the issue that Ken raised, I think his issues were all good, but the one about not being too fast to adopt something, that's not been our problem in the last 20 years. It's been too slow. So, and the, you know, it's true you don't want to pre-early lockdown that you shouldn't, but if we wait forever to get it right, we're not going to get anywhere either. So, and it, you know, things in the computer industry, there's been a lot of commitments made to given standards, and they evolve. It's not like you're done forever. And then the third thing regarding the transition of care, clearly everything has been said is right, but the environment I worked for a while, you could just look at the records from all the hospitals at once in an HIE, and that worked pretty darn well. The problem with pre-specifying the things to send particular, I know it's an advantage because you don't overload the guy, but this downside is that the thing they come in for, there may have been a miscommunication, misunderstanding. You know, they come in with problem X and all of a sudden problem Y emerges, and you'd like to look at data related to that problem too. So I think we ought to be highlighting or at least emphasizing health information exchanges too as a way for receivers of patients to explore other issues that may not have been sent in a specified package.
That's a really good point, Clem, and I think that really the idea is not so much to limit the data that would be sent, but more to focus on assuring that the necessary data has been collected. I think we all, certainly 360X assumes that a CCD patient summary record would be sent. I think we all would hope that there will be the ability to query and ask for additional data. But it was really just on the content side saying, you know, if you're sending someone to an endocrinologist for out-of-control diabetes, that you should have collected an A1C, et cetera, before sending them.
No, I agree with that. I just was trying to just point out another opportunity to get some kinds of information.
Thanks, Glenn. Other comments?
Other comments, questions for the task force?
We expected more.
Well, I'm just making sure people aren't hesitant out there, but this is great work, you guys. And as you said at the beginning, kudos also to all the members of your work group. And but you guys led a nice piece of presentation here, and we appreciate that. But all the work that you and your group are doing is really important and very much appreciated.
Well, just let's go ahead then. So a reminder of the path that we are on. We are working our way through a set of prioritized uses of health information technology The first area that we looked at was orders and results, and we developed a set of draft recommendations, which we presented here 2 months ago. We have continued to receive input on those and have a couple of additional draft recommendations that we wanted to bring to the attention of the HITAC today. We will also continue to consider and revise our recommendations around referrals and care coordination as we move on to additional domains with the task force, and then we are scheduled to prepare a formal report next year and bring it back to the HITAC. So as HITAC members have a chance to think about what we've said and what we have drafted, we welcome your input, because we really want to make sure that the final product is a thorough reflection of all of our thinking. So I think Ken was going to just go through quickly and review what we presented a couple of months ago to remind you where we've been, and then we will present a couple of additional recommendations for orders and results. Ken?
Great. Okay, so this part will be quick. It's just a recap of what we've already presented, and then we'll move on to the updates. Next slide, please. Here's the overview of the priorities around ordering, and then also around further standardization. Next slide, please. Okay, so the we've already presented this material before, so I'll be very quick. The first priority was consistent encoding of lab and other test results using LOINC and SNOMED CT, and having it provided by resulting agencies as a CLIA requirement. Another recommendation was to identify and prioritize the most common and important results of each order type. Another was to require and enforce the use of information models and terminology standards for all test orders and results. The MAP codes must be included with results as they're maintained and exchanged between HIT systems. Also, the resulting systems, such as EHRs and LISs, should provide a mechanism that allows clients to map internal result codes to standard vocabularies when such mapping hasn't already been done. And also to implement mechanisms to support and ensure proper LOINC encoding, such as auditing or certification by CLIA. Next slide, please. Another high priority recommendation was around results needing to be sent to clinicians in codified formats. So our draft recommendations included utilizing USCDI to assure that prioritized results are interoperable via V2, CCDA, FHIR, and feature transport standards. Another recommendation was to prioritize complete and accurate coding at the data source rather than trying to code or correct externally sourced data further down the line where there's less information available to know what the right code is or right semantics are about lab. Another recommendation was to require the resulting agencies provide standardized metadata such as normal ranges to ordering and copy to providers as well as to patients. And a final recommendation here was that standard metadata must be maintained as result data is transmitted between systems. Next slide, please. Another priority here was results need to be available for patients and proxies to view, receive, and utilize. So our draft recommendations included requiring that ordering providers make results available to patients and proxies within a reasonable time frame. To make all results in the EHR available to patients via APIs, whether or not they've already been standards encoded. Another recommendation was to develop and require the use of standardized patient-friendly result display names to patients, to consider requiring resulting agencies to make results available directly to patients, and also to align state and federal policies to assure consistent and predictable patient data accessibility and interoperability. Next slide, please. Okay, further priorities. These are around orderable tests needing to be standardized between systems and with mapping the standard terminologies. So draft recommendations included developing and eventually requiring the use of standards-based catalogs of orderable tests with consistent mapping associated code sets for all order types, utilizing consensus development processes to develop standard orderables for the most common and important tests of each order type, and to standardize commonly used order panels, including for the about 2,000 order panels currently cataloged by Moink. Next slide, please. Okay. And the secondary priorities included were for one was to around the need for standard methodologies to integrate external distance support, and draft recommendations included leveraging and advancing the CDS SOC standard, and also developing and supporting the use of standards to determine and expose net pricing information to relevant stakeholders, including providers, payers, and patients. Next slide, please. Another priority was the need for standards to support prior authorization workflows. So this fits in very nicely with what Dr. Rucker mentioned. So there's a number of prior authorization standardization efforts are underway, and these should be harmonized into a consistent approach. And again, a very high value use case, for example, that could be potentially tackled using CDS hooks once the ordering-based hooks are defined and validated. There's active work ongoing on that in the CDS work group right now in HL7. Next slide, please. Okay, back to you.
So thank you, Ken, for that rapid-fire review, and I think it is just helpful for the full HITECH to recall where our task force has been. But again, we did receive some additional input for additions, suggested additions to our recommendations around orders and results. And one of them has to do with the provenance data and the real importance of assuring that this metadata is maintained with results as they move between systems. And this includes not only what was the source system, but also what we've found in practice, and this is true in my organization as well, is that you really need to maintain internal system identifier data. You need to know that a given result came from a specific system, what that order was that was made and resulted, and because the receiving system needs to know if there is new data coming in on that same order. You need to be able to identify when a new data transmission maps back to previously received data if there is a need to addend the earlier version of the data. And this is getting down into the weeds, but it really is important. And it's important that provenance and internal identifier data moves independent of the transport mechanism. Again, we keep talking about the fact that this data might move via HL7 V2, V3, FHIR, but this is one of those areas where we need to separate out the functionality, the content, and the underlying standard that supports it. The other item that was raised, and again, I want to include a caveat here that our task force has not had a chance to really drill down on these yet, but we're bringing them here for the HITECH's consideration. The idea that as data begins increasingly to transmit between healthcare systems, payer systems, patient-controlled systems, which we all believe is a good thing, that there are concerns being raised about the fact that data might be tampered with along the way. So the idea of exploring the value of acquiring digital signatures on orders and or result information to assure that data has not been modified along the way. Then these signatures, or whatever term we end up using, should allow the originating system to be confirmed, values to be verified, and any tampering or changes to the data that might have occurred along the way to be identified. So we wanted to bring these additional recommendations back to the HITECH and see if you have any input. As I said, we will be discussing these in more detail with our task force and incorporating them into our final report.
Thanks. Clem, you have a comment?
Yeah, a couple comments. So regarding the last thing, the additional real deep importance of having that identifier is what's happened is you get results passed on from a second clinic or a third clinic, and you don't know which one is what. So I think you get clutter if you don't have a way what's the original. In terms of Ken's presentation, which I love because he was back to getting the actual data being shipped around, two additional things for metadata to add maybe would be abnormal flags, which makes it easy to sort of filter things to look at hard and adjust for different normal ranges. And then units of measure, which I'm sure he means to be included, didn't mention. And then the last thing is on the initial slide, it talked about SNOMED and CT and LOINC for being lab reporting, but it's, some people mix that up thinking it's either or, and what I think you really meant is that LOINC for the test identifier and SNOMED for the result or the values when they aren't numeric or text. And if that's what you meant, I think it would be helpful to clarify it. It'll get confused by later readers otherwise.
Absolutely, and I think that was in our details, but yes, that was absolutely the intent.
Yeah, Clem, you've driven that differentiation home quite well, and it is definitely included in our task force recommendations.
Okay, thank you.
We want to morph. Other comments or questions for the task force? All right.
Again, we appreciate the vote of confidence, but we remain open to people's input after the fact, if you like. If you go on to the next slide, the other domain areas that we have validated and prioritized include evidence-based disease management, the incorporation of clinical evidence into the care process, and medication and pharmacy data. There are other areas that we've looked into, including social determinants of health. I think realistically, we probably have time to go through at least two more domain areas. So these will likely be the ones that we focus on, depending on sort of the pace at which we go through them. We will continue in the new year with a twice a month meeting cadence. But we're also well aware that as the ONC rule comes out, that there may be a need for us to take a pause to focus the participants, the members' energies on other work that perhaps might be a higher priority. We're looking to our ONC team to help us determine what that's going to be. But at this point, we've completed these two rounds of initial work and really appreciate the chance to be able to come and review them with the HITECH.
Great. Other comments, questions as we wrap this up? Okay. Well, again, thank you both for your hard work and to your entire task force and committee on this. At this point, I think we are at the public comment period. Is that right, Lauren?
Yep, that's correct. I realize we are a little bit ahead of schedule, but we will go ahead and open the line. So, operator, if you could open for public comment, please.
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. And just want to acknowledge that we were joined by two additional committee members, Michael Adcock and Andy Trescott. Any other committee members who were not on at the top of the call when we did roll? And operator, do we have any commenters in the queue at this time?
Thank you. Our first comment is from Lori Griggs from Duke University.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify by changing the name from physician to provider. Are you trying now, finally, to acknowledge the role of us nurses? I was a nurse when Reagan was shot. I took care of James Brady with no automation at GW, and within a year went to Georgetown as a nurse, and that was my last year as a bedside nurse, and now I have all my degrees in IT and health policy. I worked for Reagan on health policy, so I have to say I've been begging and begging you all to acknowledge that nurses are as frustrated as Dr. Rucker in his testimony on the Hill two days ago. The questioners, some physicians themselves, acknowledge physician frustration, and I think we nurses get lost in the sauce of our frustrations. So is there going to be any, I noticed you're hiring two nursing informaticists. Is that to dig deeper into this issue?
So this is Lauren from ONC. We can certainly follow up with you offline in regards to any open positions that are available on USAjobs.gov. I'm happy to do that, but do want to thank you for your comments and for your service.
But can I have an answer to the question about the name change from physician to provider? Is that on purpose to expand the scope from just physician meaningful use and ease of use to now nurses? We are the ones using Epic and Cerner at the bedside all over this nation.
Could I offer a comment? This is Clem.
Thank you, Dr. Rushman, yes, please.
Well, I mean, I think the nurses had the same frustration, and I think it's good that it be expanded. They're sitting in a terminal all day sometimes, so I think I appreciate the caller's comment.
Thank you, Dr. McDonald.
And this is Aaron Meary. If I can make a quick comment as a CIO, provider CIO of an academic medical center, to the degree of it, I hear from the nurses all the time the importance and the urgency there. And so I think on behalf of all of the hospital CIOs that are out there, we hear loud and clear the nursing community and stand with our partners in that.
And this is Stephen Lane. I'll offer a comment as well. I think we have seen on the part of ONC an expansion. Clearly, the physicians' voices are quite loud in the health IT space, and there are a number of us represented here on the HITAC, but we also have a nursing representation. And I think in many of our efforts, we make a point of referring not just to physicians, but to providers more generally, to clinicians more generally, and really to call out the needs of all members of a patient's care team, which often includes family members and community services, et cetera. So I think that the point that you're making, certainly I embrace it. I think most of the members of the HITAC see it similarly. And again, thank you for your comment.
Thank you, Operator, any additional comments in the queue?
There are no further comments at this time.
Thank you. That will conclude our public comment period. Before we adjourn, I will just have a few general reminders before I turn it over to Carolyn and Robert. The first of which, as always, for the members of the public, you can find today's meeting materials on healthit.gov, and the meeting summary will be available in a few weeks. Also, our next in-person meeting will be January 23rd. That will be at the Omni Showroom in Washington, D.C., so you can also find additional details closer to the time of that meeting on healthit.gov. Also, as a reminder at the top of the call, you should have all received an email with a link to the strategy to reduce burden. You should have received that link in an email. Please submit your comments and share that link with your colleagues. And last but not least, in anticipation of new task forces that we expect to stand up in response to the proposed rules, we'd like to remind everyone that if you are interested in joining one of our task forces, you may do so on healthit.gov on our high-tech page under membership application. You will be able to submit your application if you have not done so already. So that concludes all of my reminders. I will now turn it over to Carolyn and Robert for any last-minute closing remarks.
Thanks, Lauren. I appreciate all the excellent discussion that we've had today and the courteous attention to our presentations. Just as a recap, the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force will be meeting on January 8th, and the Annual Report Workgroup will be meeting on January 10th. If you're interested, please dial in to listen or provide us with feedback offline. We are here to serve the full high-tech. I appreciate everyone's service this year and wish you all fine holidays. Looking forward to seeing you in January.
Carolyn, thanks. This is Robert. And just also to say to the committee, Carolyn and I are always seeking input and suggestions for how to make this process better. So please do send us email or comments about what you'd like to see in the future. We're looking forward to our next face-to-face meeting in January. And again, if you have suggestions about things we can do to improve that, please let us know. Clem, I see, no, you're just putting your microphone on. So again, as has been mentioned multiple times, we appreciate everyone's hard work on the committee. It's been a great year and a privilege to serve as your co-chair along with Carolyn. We look forward to holiday season for our families. Wish everybody a great holiday season as well. And with that, I think we'll turn it back over to Lauren to close us out. But have a great holiday season and travel safe, and we'll see you in January.
Great. Thank you. And I also just want to thank Talisha for her presentation today, as well as our task force co-chairs and our work group co-chairs. If there aren't any additional comments from the committee members, we can adjourn.
Thank you.
Happy holidays. Okay, thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.